If it matters to you, let us know. Contact us now, 1850 400 964 or email focus@clare.fm.
Very welcome back to the programme. 1 year this past Saturday since Donald Trump's inauguration as US President, quarter of the way there for him and for everybody else as well. And of course, his election is among the events of recent times, which shows how we are living in an age of political extremes. Even a cursory glance at social media reveals divisions with each end of the political spectrum vociferously arguing their cases. My next guest has been studying this phenomenon and has arrived at the conclusion that political disillusionment could be to blame. Paul Maher is a social psychologist. He's carried out his research at the University of Limerick along with some colleagues, and he joins us in studio. Paul J. Maher, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And thank you very much for joining us. What have you found, first of all?
Well, what we found in the context of the US election, for example, we found that people who had voted for Hillary Clinton experienced a disillusionment in response to the results of the election last year. In 2016, and that this disillusionment led them to express more extreme political views. On a general level, they identified as closer to the left, if you like, wing end of the spectrum. And on specific issues, they increased support for issues on climate change and healthcare for wider availability of healthcare and so on.
I wouldn't have thought that much of this was a surprise, in that this was a very polarising campaign, and the very nature of US politics, where you have two leading parties, half or over half of the voters, as it was in this case, because of course she won the popular vote, over half of the voters are going to be disappointed that their candidate lost. So this would have been expected, maybe.
Yes, and that's precisely why we set up the study this way. So what we were looking for was instances of political disillusionment, and we predicted that with the results of this election, as you said, we had almost guaranteed that we would have some disillusionment either among Clinton supporters or among Trump supporters. Of course, we expected we would have disillusioned Trump supporters, and that's what we were interested in. And it's interesting because a lot of research in this area has shown this polarization on the right, and that's in a sense what we were anticipating. But what we got instead was disillusioned liberal voters or left-wing voters. And we found still this polarisation in response. So the study was quite novel in that
sense. How do you measure disillusionment?
We simply have a list of questions. We know what disillusionment is because we have, in previous research, we've asked people to describe the experience in great detail, and we broke it down into different components. There's a sense of hopelessness, there's expectancy violation, there's uncertainty. And so we ask people just to report how much they're feeling disillusioned, how much they're feeling hopeless,
okay,
and uncertain.
And did any aspect of your findings surprise you? Is there more in the way of disillusionment? Are people more fed up than you expected, maybe?
I think it was as we expected. I mean, the most surprising thing, like I said, was the result. We did expect to be surveying disillusioned Trump supporters, and on a general level, then the surprising thing was that we found as much disillusionment or as much polarization on the left as you would find on the right.
Okay, is that in any way unique to this particular race, or if you were to do a similar study after Brexit in Britain, if you were to do a similar study after a general election, maybe in this country, would you find to a certain extent what you have found in the States?
Yes, we'd be quite confident that we would. We did do some research in the aftermath of Brexit. Again, we weren't anticipating that result. So on the day, we surveyed people and we found high levels of disillusionement, and we found that could be responsible for a shift to a more left-wing side of the spectrum in UK politics. You've got Jeremy Corbyn now, of course, who takes a more radical view and has brought Labour closer to the left. But we didn't have, we weren't prepared for that like we were with the Donald Trump study, so we didn't have that shift in views from before to after. We can only speculate that that's what's happened. And we did do a third study where we looked at disillusionment in general, not in response to a political outcome. And we found that people expressed a greater desire to engage in political activism when they were disillusioned.
Is that a good thing?
It can be.
It can be argued it's a good thing anyway. You know, yeah. You want people to be active in politics.
For sure. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, it, again, to use the UK as an example, we saw a high turnout amongst young people in the last general election, a group that I think many people would have considered disillusioned with UK politics. And when they're offered, I guess, a radical alternative, if you could say, by Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party, we saw much more engagement with politics over there. So it's not always a bad thing, for sure.
So what's your general takeaway then? As I say, you've looked at this and you've outlined how people are disappointed and disillusioned after the result of the election in the States. But what does it say to you then about society as a whole? Or maybe, if you don't want to go that broad, maybe just the people that you examined or that you surveyed, rather?
It says that people are looking for explanations. People are looking for reasons why these surprising events happened or these disillusioning events happened. I think there's a need for deep reflection on these issues in response to disillusionment. We show that when people don't reflect in response to disillusionment, they have a tendency to brood or to polarise their views. For example, people may assume anyone who voted for Donald Trump is a racist or something, rather than stepping back and thinking, well, he may attract votes from white supremacists or so, but the idea that anyone who voted for Trump is just a racist is perhaps too extreme a response, too simple an explanation. We find that what people are looking for is certainty, to regain a sense of meaning, to help them quickly understand what's happened. So that on a general level, we think that there's a need for a deeper reflection, I guess.
And maybe that runs counter to the world we live in of,
yeah.
I know it's not 140 characters anymore, yeah. But a world of social media, a world of, even in the general mainstream media, particularly in the States, the extreme coverage that you get of left and right-wing media with very little of a centrist ground.
Yeah, precisely. And as well, if you consider Trump and Brexit as themselves polarising, as a result of polarisation, maybe you saw people in the UK voting for Brexit because they adopted more extreme views on the right, you have this cumulative polarisation, the sense that if Trump was caused by polarisation, and in response to Trump, we have further polarisation. So you can see very quickly how this can spiral.
So where's it all going to go to then?
Well, I think that depends on a lot of different factors. If people in the UK, for example, with Jeremy Corbyn, you've got a real alternative for people to invest their views in and to believe in. People may withdraw from politics completely if they feel that no one is representing them. But there is certainly space and room, I guess, for a new alternative to emerge, if you like, a new centre ground.
Hard to see it coming in the States in particular, though, just because of the makeup of society and the huge amount of money that it takes to get involved at any sort of a level over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. There's structural barriers, especially in the US. But even there, they had a candidate called Bernie Sanders, who almost won the Democratic nomination ahead of Hillary Clinton. And he's someone who's talking about issues that were not popular in American politics for a long time, left-wing issues, universal health care, for example. So even then, when enough people get behind a movement and when there's a real collective unity, you can see the emergence of alternatives like Sanders, like Corbyn.
It sounds like the sort of research that the political system and the political parties themselves should listen to and take heed of. You know, I mean, it's the sort of thing maybe they're experiencing or seeing, but I mean, you're talking about room for a centrist party or movement of some sort to emerge. You know, you're providing what sounds like pretty invaluable data into what people really think.
Yeah, we hope so. That's certainly one of our aims. The main focus of the research was the experience of disillusionment and trying to understand this from an individual level. But that, I guess, is like a spin-off of our research. Like you said, these are times when political disillusionment is very high in this country also.
Is it going to get higher? Or can it only get higher, I guess, is my real question. I mean, you talked about that cycle where Brexit happened because people were disillusioned and then it made more people disillusioned. And then you had a general election there in the UK, which led to a government getting turfed out when they thought that, you know, they were going to sail in a snap election that Theresa May called and they weren't turfed out. But, you know, she lost a lot of MPs, she lost her majority, etc. And you look at the coverage over and that side of the RC, and you know there's certainly a lot that if you were over there could cause you to roll your eyes and be fed up with it all. It feels like it's a cycle which is perpetuating itself.
Yeah, I think what you need is an emergence in the centre ground, I guess, of an alternative, not necessarily an alternative, but a legitimate political movement that people really believe in. Like in France, for example, where you had a similar polarization and you had Marie Le Pen getting close to election to the president there, you had Macron who presented what was an alternative, but not necessarily a polarizing alternative. He was a centre-right candidate, but he was someone who wasn't didn't have a strong political background, I guess. He started his own party and was seen as an alternative. And a legitimate alternative. You know, people need to believe that their views are being addressed, that the causes of their polarization are being addressed, and that...
But is the concern there that if you put in a businessman who's got no political experience into the White House, or you put in a relative rookie at the helm in France, that these movements will then turn around and I don't want to say betray the voters, but that the hopes of those voters won't be met, won't be realised. That the candidates can't deliver.
For sure, yeah. I mean, there's the potential for that to happen always.
Okay.
But it's not necessarily the case. Doesn't necessarily have to be.
That's my cynicism. Where does your research go from here? You've published it, obviously. Is there more work to come?
So we're looking at... again, disillusionment in general and how people can deal with disillusionment on a personal level. And for example, people engage in nostalgia sometimes to remember the past. It increases their sense of belongingness. It increases their sense of meaning. As I said, we're looking at how people can more deeply reflect on the causes of their disillusionment and the reasons why they're feeling disillusioned to counteract the negative outcomes that can be associated with the experience.
Paul J. Maher, social psychologist at the University of Limerick. Appreciate your time and thanks very much for joining us on the programme this morning.
Thank you very much.
We'll take a bit of music now. Cranberries on Clare FM. It's Morning Focus. Dolores and the Cranberries there on Clare FM. We need to get your comments. Let's do that now. Lots of people getting in touch via text. Get to those in a second. But also by phone, 1850 400 964, Fiona McGarry.
Gavin, yes, quite a few calls during your interview, exclusive interview with Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, and then the subsequent follow-up with Timmy Dooley. Mm. One listener wanted to know if Fianna Fáil, will Leo Varadkar reopen 24-hour A&E services at Ennis General Hospital?
I wouldn't hold my breath. I think that ship has sailed, unfortunately, in the eyes of those who are making the decisions. I mean, so I didn't put it to him for that reason. He had, I'll put it this way, he was Minister for Health. He had the opportunity to do so already.
At that particular time. A big reaction then to the follow-up interview. Lots of people making the point. They wanted to say that Fianna Fáil downgraded Ennis General Hospital with the axing of the 24-hour A&E cover there. Another two Margarets were in touch, actually, Gavin, and another point on the hospitals. The first Margaret, who is calling from Ennis Diamond, she wanted to say that she feels there's poor management at University Hospital Limerick and that that's the root of the overcrowding problem. She said it's the same old ding-dong every day. She said she was a nurse herself. She's in Ireland, back in Ireland, 34 years, and she said when she was nursing, she never saw the likes of what's going on today.
Interesting stuff.
Another Margaret then, listening in Kilkee, she's calling Gavin on all of the Clare TDs to get together to see if they can reinstate services from Shannon Airport to Chicago. She wanted to point out that there are many older emigrants living in the Chicago area who would like to return to the Midwest. She said they don't want to fly into Dublin. She said they don't really mind which airline provides that service, but she feels there is a demand and a need there for that.
Yeah, and I know that that's sentiment was expressed at the time the service was pulled. I know as well you can do connecting flights, say via JFK in particular, or Newark, but again there's obviously
she mentioned the connections via JFK and Newark
are not as ideal,
and if you're an older traveller it's not that
easy. Oh yeah, absolutely, and I 100% agree with that, because the way it works, you're queuing again, I think, over there, isn't that it, from domestic to international so no, completely understand that point. And actually on a similar theme, Trudy was in touch via text referring to Timmy Dooley's interview. She says that Timmy Dooley is very good at criticising his opposition. Maybe if he put his efforts into working with his Clare colleagues instead of constantly undermining them, as Trudy sees it, he might get more done. It's clear he has no understanding of new politics, she says.
Okay. Okay, she's nailing colours there to the mask.
Absolutely, yeah.
Mary also was in touch about a political matter, Gavin, as well. She was in Ennis Diamond on Saturday. She didn't know Leo Varadkar was on his way into the town, but she saw him and she was a little bit smitten, I think it's safe to say. She said she noticed one of the things about him that she liked was he didn't overdo the handshaking. She said he wasn't too keen to press the flesh, but she said she shook hands with everybody who approached him. She said Leo Varadkar came across as gentle and shy, and he held her attention throughout his address and as he moved through the crowds. He said a woman gave Leo Varadkar a baby for a photo, and she said Leo Varadkar seemed more nervous than the baby itself. And he said when he holds babies they always start to cry. But she was Margaret seems to be very taken, and she was quite complimentary about Leo Varadkar. She said when it comes to hospital issues, she believes the management need to be held to account, and Timmy Dooley, she said, on this issue she believes he's a hurler on the ditch and that Fianna Fáil didn't do a great job in health.
Fair enough. There you go. Let us know your thoughts on all of those at home. I'll read one more for now. Seamus is in touch. Hi, Gavin. With a Tommy Fleming on Saturday night. Great show. He gave great praise to Clare FM, the best local radio station in the country. Don't know if that's Seamus's thoughts or what Tommy Fleming had to say. We'll take the compliment either way. Fiona, thank you very much. Back with more shortly. Listening to Morning Focus and Clare FM.
Morning Focus in association with Shannon Airport. Fly Shannon and pack more into your day with up to 38 departures each week to London. Explore more today on shannonairport.ie.